Alright, so we'll sneak in the Friday Shir here, the Musar Day of Perek Tassayin. So there's a lot of famous Torah, the first Perek, the first section of Parshas Korach. So we'll do some of it. Today is, what, the first? 26th of Shvat, but the first of February. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Mishpatim. Okay, so there is a section here in the beginning of Mesilas Yesharim. So Mesilas Yesharim, it says, "V'tira k'shi halatzim v'ashchasa so harvei," that considered the great severity of the destructive power of latzon. What is latzon? Latzon leitzanus, the idea of levity. Kain ki kemo hamagin hamashuach b'shemen asher yashmid v'yapim me'olav hachitzim hamashlichim la'aretz. Because it's like a shield that is smeared with oil, which wards off arrows and causes them all to fall to the ground, not permitting them to making them unable to go and penetrate the actual body of a person. So too the idea of levity, before reproof and rebuke, just a little bit of a joke, so they could cast a person from all of these awakenings and impressions, all of the different types of stimulations that he could possibly have. That takes the.
Are you saying that the joke is good or bad?
So he's saying, well, Leitzanus is not exactly a joke. Leitzanus is levity. So an acting in a way of levity is under many circumstances is bad, but it will make it unable to allow meaningful things to penetrate. That is what his suggestion is. It doesn't mean that all jokes are bad. It could be that we do have an idea of starting Shiurim with a joke, because that will enable people to open them up. But bringing on a idea of real, this is perhaps the best word to use might be cynicism. To allow cynicism to enter, so that will prohibit the ability of things to come in. I think we've the Mahal mentioned before, the Gemara Maseches Brachos, when it says that Eliyahu Hanavi, when he davened that the fire should come down from Shemayim in order to burn up the par, so he said, Anini Hashem Anini. Hashem should answer me and answer me. So the Gemara says, why does he say answer me twice? Anini Hashem Anini. Anini that the fire should come down from the heaven, and Anini Shelo Yomar Maisa Kishufim. And answer me also that they won't say that it's just a magic trick that I pulled. Right, and they're on the same level. That would be an amazing miracle if fire could come down from the heavens, and it would be an amazing miracle if the guy in the back of Shul doesn't say, "Ha, come on, I've seen better on YouTube, or I know how he did it," or something like that. Right? So that is the power of Leitzanus, the power of Hispatlus, sometimes it's known, of nullification, and things of that nature. So the Sif Sheikhaim, In Midos Vavodos Hashem, Chelek Beis, page Taf Tes Zayin. So it says, what is a paradigmatic example of this idea of the Hashpa of Leitzanus? So he says the idea of Korach. That Korach comes in order to come and make his claim against Moshe, and he says, why is it that you get to be in charge, and why did you choose your brother to be the Kohen? And if we think about his Taina, after all the things that Korach has done, he seems like he should have no chance at being able to be successful. I mean, how could he possibly be successful in his argument? Why would anybody? Why would anybody believe him? So, what does he do? So, the Medrash actually comments: Uva Moshev Leitzim. The first very first pasuk in Tehillim says: Asher Ish something. Uva Moshev Leitzim lo Yeshav. Then he didn't dwell amongst the Leitzim. That first paragraph of Tehillim is often used at funerals, as a parak of Tehillim, to say at a levaya that the person was serious, that they weren't somebody who dwelt among the leitzim. So the Medrash actually comments, "Ze Korach." That's the idea of Korach. Shachayim islotzeitz al Moshe Aaron, that he lays an idea of leitzanus against Moshe. And what is the example of his leitzanus? His example is the tal shekulo tchelas. Now, was that a serious question or was that an unserious question? So the way he seems to be putting it is, it's an unserious question. Right? Everybody knows that there's a mitzvah, but by raising the question that way, he was mocking the mitzvah. He was coming in and making the mitzvah nullified, making Moshe's leadership in the point of it. What is the point of following these things? Right? He was just being able to mock it. And that brings us to one of the more famous essays that's out there from Rav Soloveitchik. entitled The Common Sense Rebellion Against Torah Authority, where he, just the title itself might reveal what the entire essay is about. But that is, well, which maybe I guess it's supposed to do, right? But the Common Sense Rebellion Against Torah Authority. So it quotes that, that medrash. And what was Korach's rationale? So Korach himself had his own ideas of what he was attempting to do, but the way that his populist movement would be able to grow would be to question the Tamei HaMitzvos. He raised the question to Moshe and said, "If what's the point of Tcheles? What's the point of the blue strings? In order to remind us of the heavens, which reminds of the sea, or the sea reminds of the heaven, reminds us of the covenant. Well, if I'm going to get that from one string, I should be able to get that from an entire garment, in which case there's no point in having the tchelis." That is his argument. What's the point of having a mezuzah on the door? The point of having a mezuzah on the door is to remind us of God's presence in the room. Well, if the room is filled with Sifrei Torah, so then I don't need a reminder of God's presence. And he was being what we refer to as Dorish Taima Dekra. He was explaining that the reasons were for the mitzvos, and based on those reasons that he gave, right, he then said, oh, and if that's the case, so we're going to paskin halachos differently. Right? That's what he's saying. And obviously, every mitzvah has a reason, and this is the reason. So if this is the reason, so then this should be the appropriate reaction to it. However, we don't do that. We actually prohibit this idea of darshin and time dekra. We do try to figure out what the reasons are behind mitzvos, but we don't paskin based on what the reasons are behind mitzvos. Right? That is a very important distinction. Korach was attempting to paskin based on what he did. But what was his appeal? So says the Rav, Korach's appeal to common sense in Judaism was basically a claim that, well, let's skip the little section. He says that, explains that there is, that people do have the Korach was trying to paskin based on his own understanding. So he makes up the point, certain people have the idea that there are those that have expertise. But Korach didn't raise a complaint against Bezalel. Right? Korach only raised a complaint against Moshe. Why does Moshe get to be the leader? I could do that. He didn't claim I could do what Bezalel did. Bezalel was the one who created the Mishkan. That was beyond his possibility. So in the description of Bezalel, Bezalel had Chachma Bina Udas. Those are the three terminologies used to explain Bezalel. So what does Chachma mean? Chachma is that he had a special type of scholarship. Bina is the ability to analyze and make distinctions. And when you combine, and when you combine Bina with Chachma, we have an especially gifted and creative thinker. Das deals with the common sense, basic intelligence, and sound practical judgment. So Korach's appeal to common sense in Judaism is basically saying that only Das and not Chachma is what is necessary for the application of Halacha. We have our own common sense, and we can understand what will bring us to the religious, you know, what religious things are necessary for us, and we have the ability to then act accordingly. Right? The legal aspects of halacha require expertise, technical and academic, but he maintained that there is also a psychological and emotional aspect to the practice of halacha and the observance of mitzvos, and judging the utility, relevance, and beneficial effects of the mitzvos, all intelligent people are qualified to render judgment on the basis of close and informed observation. For this, he argued, common sense, human experience, and basic judgment are the criteria. On this basis is what he challenged the authority of Moshe. On the basis of Korach's theory, the mitzvah would have to correspond to the mood that prompts it. That there's an idea that we're trying to get, or there's an emotion that we're either attempting to demonstrate, we're trying to show something that we feel is necessary to show, and therefore the mitzvah corresponds to that. The value of the mitzvah is to be found not in its performance, but in its subjective impact on the person, his ability to arouse a devotional state of mind. Tefillin would be justified only for the elevating and inspirational qualities. The mitzvah of shofar would be valued only if succeeding in arousing the Jew to the tshuva. If these mitzvahs ceased having that impact, so then the purpose of doing their ritual then becomes nullified. That is the claim that that Korach was bringing forth. So what is the and this is an example of that. The point is the following. Therefore, we don't have a reason to do it if we're going to be able to get that feeling otherwise. However, we don't We don't assume that way, right? We don't assume the primary thing. When we talk about mitzvahs and doing the mitzvahs, there certainly is an idea of kiyum shebalev. There certainly is an idea of something that we're trying to get inside, but our starting point is not what are we trying to get inside. Our starting point is what the mitzvah is. And based on doing the mitzvah correctly, so then we will be able to get that emotion. As the Rav says, the mitzvah does not depend on the emotion, rather it induces the emotion. One's religious inspiration and fervor are generated and guided by the mitzvah, not the reverse. The goal is proper kavanah and genuine dveikus, but these can be religiously authentic only if they follow the properly performed mitzvah. Okay, so that is the claim against Korah. So the question then is, why? Why? Right. Why, if the goal ultimately is to get that dveikus, that feeling, that connection, etc., so let's do that. Right? What is? Why do we need the mitzvah in between? So he gives three ideas. The first two have to do with, well, because then it's just going to be subjective and everything is going to change often enough. Now, Fiani is nice, he doesn't necessarily answer the question. But okay, so it changes. But the third one, I think, does. Right? We have no reliable gauge to differentiate secular types of response from the genuine religious experience. What is our motivation? What is that inner feeling that we're attempting to achieve? Is it something that is true, correct, according to the Torah perspective, or is it something that is true and correct according to the reading of the New York Times op-ed pages? Right, where exactly is that motivation coming from? And if we're going to leave it up to the judgment of a person, you're not going to get it. Right? Every time you see some reform leader say, based on my Jewish, as a Jewish rabbi, I hereby declare that, we have no right to put up a wall at the border. Oh, wait a second. Right? Who says? Now, not necessarily taking a stance on whether a wall at the border is appropriate or not, but where are you getting that from? Is it just because it's based on your Jewish values, your Torah values, or is it based on, your values, which you are then going to then find some kind of source in the Torah for? What's motivating it? The Torah? Or is it you? And that's always going to be the questions. Therefore, we need the directive, the mitzvah directive, in order to then inform what our emotions will be. But then he goes and says something also. Beyond that, another, a more fascinating idea, and that is, if all we're going to do is say, oh, well, I have this feeling and I'm going to act accordingly, so then we never get beyond man's finite feelings. Right? Torah is supposed to be elevating. Torah is not supposed to be reflective. Mitzvahs are supposed to bring us to higher levels. It's not just to be reflective of the status that we're on. And that is, and that's what we turn to the Torah for. Pagans, he writes, pagans in ancient times abandoned themselves to hypnotic trances and orgiastic ceremonies, and mistakenly identified these as religious experiences. The self was never transcended. Man starts with himself and does not communicate beyond himself. The Torah emphasizes the mitzvah which reflects God's will. It has the stamp of immutability and universality. The great religious romance of man with God, the emotional transfer, follows one's observance of the mitzvah. Mitzvah, not the reverse. That we are brought to a higher level through the mitzvahs. I remember seeing this from Rabbi David Aaron, a very important point, and that is we do attempt to, one could go through the entire Torah, and a style of learning and a style of teaching is to say, look, the Torah is very logical, and not only that, the Torah thought of all these things before anybody else thought of all these things. Right? And you see how it fits into what our modern, and all of that is good and appropriate up to a level. But if we attempt to then say, oh, and therefore, based on what we know now, we see how all the values of the Torah make perfect sense to us, right? And it all fits in. If you're going to limit it to that, so then you sort of cut out God. You say, well, now we get it. We've developed to the point now we don't need God. No, you always need a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You always need the Torah. The Torah is always going to attempt to bring a person to a higher level. Yeah?
If you know absolutely right, and you are God, what do you need another one for?
Right.
God.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Yes.
Does allow for the different categories of its vote and understanding of them.
Okay. I mean, we're limited to the things that we get so far. We're not going to attempt to expand ourselves.
And yeah. Some of them are not obvious. And some of them, even if God, I think, explained them to you, you still won't understand.
Right. So I think the Sifsei Chaim has elsewhere the idea of Mashiach is a similar idea, and that is that one can always get better. That the idea, the importance of why do we have to believe in Mashiach? Why is that a necessary component of Orthodox practice? Like, we do what we have to do, whether or not there's going to be Mashiach one day. So I understand, you know, and you're in the depths of whatever, you need to have that, because, you know, how could this be? This is a terrible existence, etc. Oh, there's going to be a future, but now things are pretty good. Right, why is Mashiach an important component? Sissi Chaim says that the importance of Mashiach is to demonstrate that there's always something to strive for more. That things will be better, that there are legitimate, even things that are pretty good, we could live as we are. There's always an ability to improve and get better, and that is one of the messages of the idea of emuna and belief in Mashiach that is going to come. Okay. Another issue that the Sifsei Chaim discusses a little bit better in the same volume, which is helpful because they're pretty big, these volumes, and that is the idea of there we go. Another comment, he actually has a section here where he's giving biurim explanations of Mesilas Yesharim. He has a whole section here where he goes through the Mesilas Yesharim, and it's probably the shirim that he gave on the Sefer Mesilas Yesharim. So a little bit later on, talks about the idea of zrizus, the idea of making sure that one is, I don't know, zealous is the right term. Let me translate zrizus. The trait of zeal. So what is the idea of zeal? So the fear that one would have, and the importance of the time, and the importance of being able to get to the truth of the matter. And he explains that when, if you go through the sin of the Meraglim, followed by the sin of the story of Korach, there was a inability to get to the bottom line. That they were claiming one thing, and the argument was about A, while the real inner conflict was really about subject B. Right? With regards to the Meraglim, the story, their argument was, can we go and conquer Eretz Yisrael? Yes or no? That if one looks at the cover, that was what their argument was about. What was the inner debate? The inner debate was that the Nesiim were afraid of losing their positions of power once they're going to get into Eretz Yisrael. That's at a lower or a higher level, they are afraid of losing their spiritual state that they achieved in the desert, and that's the question. But they weren't arguing, outwardly they weren't arguing about that, they were just arguing about whether we'll be able to be successful or not. Continues on and says, the same thing would be by the story of Korach. The story of Korach, outwardly, what was Korach, what did Korach tell people that his gripe was against Moshe? Outwardly, he was telling people, you know, we're all kadosh, we all have the ability. Why is Moshe claiming the leadership for himself? What set Korach off, though? So the Rashi himself told us. What set him off was, what?
Somebody bought him, guy.
Yeah, that he thought he was entitled to a position, and he gave someone else that position. Right? So the outward dispute wasn't, in this case, what Helmut said, was the complete opposite of what the inner dispute was. And if you could follow the Korach story to its alternative conclusion, right? Our conclusion was that the ground opened up, and Korach was swallowed up, and Moshe was successful, and Korach's people even admitted to that. As one continues in the story, the Gemara tells us. But the alternative answer would have been that, oh, Moshe would have left, he would have been dethroned, there would have been a coup, Moshe's gone, and then what happens? Who's in charge? Well, either Korach, or one of these 250 dudes who all think that they're the ones who should really be in charge, right? Or Dustin and Aviram, they may be, we're from Ruby, they think that we're really the ones that are supposed to be in charge. And so on one hand, the dispute said this, but really their machlokas was about B. And that brings about to one of the most famous lines, the most comments about the story of Korach, and that is a Mishnah in Maseches Avos. The Mishnah in Maseches Avos tells us what is an example of a machlokas l'shem shemayim. We have that here. What is an example of a machlokas for the sake of heaven? So the Gemara answers what? Hillel and Shammai, right? Kol machlok shilu shem shemayim sofa lehiskayim. Whatever, I'm unclear what that means. But if not shem shemayim, it's going sofa lehiskayim. Ain't sofa lehiskayim. It's not going to last. So what is the machlok shilu shem shemayim? That's the machlok is Hillel v'Shammai. V'she'ena l'shem shemayim zu machlok is Korach v'chol adasun. If it's not l'shem shemayim, that's the machlok of Korach and his entire Ida. Now, what strikes one odd about that Mishnah just right off the bat? So the major question: what is an oddity of that Mishnah? A good machlokas is between Shammai and Hillel. A bad machlokas is between Korach and his people.
One for the sake of heaven, the other one for
right. But just I don't know grammatically, but just in terms of what the words we just said.
Right. So, two people. One was.
What are the two people on two different sides, right? Shammai versus Hillel. And the other side was Korach and his people, right? Not Korach and Moshe, but Korach and his people. So perhaps the simplest answer is because that was where that was going to be headed. That those people were clearly not L'shem Shammai, and that they were not being true. They were not getting to the essence of what the Machlokas was about. Perhaps one could turn, I just was thinking, that with regards to Torah it is, right? When Shammai and Hillel were arguing, they were being open about what their machlokas was. What was their machlokas? Their machlokas was whatever their machlokas was about. In terms of Torah, that was their only dispute. As opposed to sometimes where it could be is, we might be arguing about this issue in halacha outwardly, but what's the inner machlokas? What's the inner problem that's going on? Who's really smarter than who? Right? Who really has the upper hand on the other person? Right? Shammai and Hillel were able to achieve that status of clearly only being L'shem Shemayim. He quotes here, Rabbi Simon quotes here from the Sefer, Or Vashemesh. Or Vashemesh was written by Rav Kalanmis Kalman Halevi Epstein. He was the main Talmud of the Noam Elimelech. Who's the Noam Elimelech? His mother didn't call him Noam Elimelech. He was Rav Elimelech Leshensk. You can go today. His kever is it's one of these shrines, sort of in Eastern Europe that one could visit till today. When I visited there, I guess 20 years ago, they were talking about their plans to build a hotel and a mikveh and jewels, etc. I don't know if it's developed or not, but it's one of the main attractions over there. I think he was third generation of Hasidus. His Talmid included also like the Chozumi Lublin, people of that ilk.
Where is this?
Leshensk in Poland, okay. Eastern Poland. This person, I just did a little bit of searching into it. Just he was his father moved to Krakow, and when he was 5 years old, and he used to like help his father. He used to bring deliveries for his father. He would bring deliveries. He'd go by the shul, and it felt like he would just walk into the shul and listen to the shiurim that took place. So there was a wealthy guy who was there, and he, after the shiur was over, he asked this 5-year-old, "Yeah, come on, you know, tell me over the shiur," like as a joke. To which the kid said, "Well," it startled, rattled it off. So this wealthy person realized that this was not any stam, you know, bread deliverer, and therefore said, "I'm going to. I'll support him in his learning. I'll pay for him to go to yeshiva. I'll make sure he has the top malamid on condition that he marries my daughter when he turns bar mitzvah." Okay, so he had 7 years, and then he got which he did. But then he wanted to go to a study by Rav Elimelech. His father-in-law didn't want him to. His wife told him go anyways. He did, and there's an interesting story about that. He ultimately became the Hasidic Rav of Krakow, which itself is a machlokas, big sense already is an issue. He is buried, you can visit his kever today. He's buried in the Krakow Cemetery, right behind the Shul of the Ramah, is the big Krakow Cemetery. You can go and see his kever today. So anyways, it's a Mor Hashemesh comments that the Mishnah is very careful to say that it's a machlokas between Shammai and Hillel, as opposed to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, right? Already you get into Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, so there was already some tension between the two yeshivas about which one had a better style of learning, which one had a better Rosh Yeshiva, which one is founded differently, etc. So, but Hillel and Shammai, they had a machlokas, their machlokas were clearly L'shem Shammai. And that's an important thing, b'zman hazeh, even with issues that exist today. Making sure that the machlokas is about the issue, as opposed to the machlokas being about something when really their arguing is about something else. And one more point, I know we raised this when we did Rishonim Day. And that is at the end of the parak when Moshe says, "If Hashem should create this, if Hashem creates this, then you'll know that I'm the real leader." So Rashi makes a comment that in Bria Pol Arth Vishishim Me'Avreishim Mutavim Lav Yivra Hashem, that if it was created here from the 6 days of creation, great, and if not, Hashem will create it. Now there is a mission in Pirkei Avos that lists the things that Hashem created Bein Hashmashos, these several miraculous things that existed. Hashem created Bein Hashmashos. One of those is the
fire.
The what?
The fire
was, fire is known as being as Adam created Motzi Shabbos. There's another issue along those lines. We'll get to it, but. But there are several things that were created then. So one of them being the mouth of the ground. So what's going on there? What is that whole? So first of all, why is Rashi saying, oh, if not, you have to create it now? Is that really the idea? So the Gemara doesn't explain it that way. The Gemara explains that what he was talking about, if the mouth of Gehenna is right here, great, just open it up and they'll have a direct line right into Gehenna. And if not, please move that here. Please move the entrance here. So it wasn't that he was asking for possibly a new creation. He was just saying, if I'm not in the right spot, make it so that I'm in the right spot. That was his argument. That's what the Gemara actually says when this idea, the Gemara at the very end of Masechah Sanhedrin. But what's going on here? So it says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in the Emes LeYaakov that when Hashem created the world, that he created it so perfectly that it could be that people will be able to deny Hashem's role in it. Or either, if not to deny Hashem's role in the creation of the world, at least to deny that Hashem is still present in the world. So therefore, he added in these things. When he gave the world, so to speak, to people to take care of, he added things in to remind them that to remove those thoughts from those that make a mistake. Therefore, it says every time I'm not sure every time I didn't go through, but he quotes several times when these things listed in that Mishnah took place. So he gives a reason, right, in why it's taking place. Kimei Meriva, the idea of the water with the bitter waters. Haisaladas hayish Hashem bekerbeinu. That was to know that Hashem is with us. The man, it says, v'yadat ki Hashem hotziyischem yeretz Yisrael. That we will know that Hashem took us out of Egypt. Keshes, rainbow. Now, rainbow is a little bit of a challenging thing, was that we see rainbows all the time. So what exactly is the keshes that Hashem created? Okay? But it appeared, right, that also is to show that Hashem still plays a role in the world. That was the purpose of all of these. And he adds in as well, the last thing mentioned in that Mishnah, is the tseves betseves asuya, that he also made tongs for tongs. Tongs, T-O-N-G-S. Tongs for tongs. What does it mean, tongs for tongs? So the commentary on the Mishnah explains, because where did the first tongue come from? Right? Right? If you need tongs in order to create tongs, where did you get the first tongue? What?
It's Pirkei Avot.
Yeah, it's Pirkei Avot. That's where it's coming from. Where did he get it from? So it must be that Hashem created the first tongue. Right? So what is that talking about? It says, because that's the same thing. If you look intensely at tongues, right, something that had to, where'd the first one come from? Must be that it came from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So these things are all reminders that when things are, when it looks like everything's just running naturally and people really are powerful, and especially when there's arguments about people for power, so there's a reminder at that point specifically of Hashem really was in charge, Hashem really created the world, and even though Hashem sort of takes a step back and lets things develop, still Hashem is very much welcome and integral to the continuation of the world and our existence and growth. All right, with that, stop. Have a good Shabbos. We'll pick up with the next paragraph.